All right. Should we get to rule three or should we do rule two?
Let's
try
rule two first.
All right. Okay. Rule two then.
Yeah. Well, we all know about
that. When the shadow hath responded after lunch, in meditation deep the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. And the shadow hath responded in meditation deep. So it's a dual meditation. The lower light is thrown upward, probably the light of the three personality elementals. The greater light of the soul illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth, and the work of the four is going to create a point of light in rule three. Yes.
Is there the passive implies that something else is in home? Is it the soul that's getting underneath and it's like a catapult?
Oh.
What's the impulse?
Right. Unless it throws, is thrown or throws itself upward or, you know, what is that which, I suppose it's under the impulse of the soul. Yeah. It's somehow invoked and responds, you know. And in the response, there's a throwing upward. And actually, there's a technical chakra meaning to all of this. It's not a general thing. When we get into the treatise on white magic, we'll see what he means in terms of the base of the spine, solar plexus, heart, and head center. And basically, we will find the head center absorbing the light of these three chakras, which will be, you know, and then he'll tell us about samadhi and how samadhi is the absorbing of all of the energies of the body into the head center.
So the root chakra is the...
Is the propelling agent? Finally, yes. Finally, at the fifth initiation, yes.
So we're not talking about...
No. But then again, what type of magician are we talking about here? Remember, you know, there's no true white magic unless the third eye is really open. So who is the true white magician? Well, let's just say before the third degree, it's a very iffy matter. So we are talking about the future here, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah, we're not given these methods. We're pretty unstable still. Here, the work of the two, the ego on its own plane and its instrument in the three worlds, is shown as linked and coordinated. The work of the two. Two meditations are proceeding simultaneously, and that's what the contemplator realizes, is it not? The one who contemplates meditates until he slips into the meditation of the soul, which for him becomes contemplation. So if you, while meditating, slip into the meditation of the soul, this is contemplation. This is how AAB seemed to bring it forward from intellect to intuition. All right. Gosh, I think a different circadian rhythm is in effect at the moment. Yeah.
I like that phrase that
yeah.
you just said.
Yes?
The one who meditates slips into the meditation of the soul and it becomes
contemplation. The meditation of the soul is very steady. And contemplation has to have perceptive steadiness. This is kind of interesting because perceptive steadiness is given to the sixth ray, eventually, which is finally, eventually, ruled monadically by Venus, which is the planet of the steady gaze. It's all coming out of the Ajna Center when the sixth ray rules the Ajna Center, which is later in the development of things. At first, it's more given to outer observation than to inner vision. That's why the fifth ray is so useful in the beginning. And via the Ajna Center, you observe. But then what happens when you want to observe the inner worlds? That's a different method.
Which one did you say, fifth or sixth?
Well, the fifth is the first. See, the rulership of the Ajna Center goes from 5 to 4 to 1. No, 5 to 4 to 6. 5 to 4 to 6. And at a certain point, it's even a bit ruled by Ray 1 and the Sun, because it's the center of the dominant integrated personality. You can find almost every chakra, every ray in the Ajna Center, even the seventh, depending on what plane we're talking about. We will find when we study the chakras related to the rays related to the astral chakras that they are somewhat different from the rays of the etheric chakras. Which is, you know, how does that happen? That's rather interesting. We're all doing the Australian mudra. That's why they have those little things on their hat.
Yeah.
Those little threads with balls. So when they shake their head, it gets the flies away.
Yeah.
Well, revelation.
So the flies are a manifestation of humanity on the astral plane, though?
I think it's the lower mental thought form creation. But I'm not saying they don't belong. I think we augment them. I think we augment insects. Not that God didn't create insects. You know. What are they? They're already relatively high, aren't they, in the phylum? I mean, they're beyond worms. They're beyond crustacea. They're already exoskeletons. They are rather advanced, really. Yes. Which would you rather be, a fly or a worm? Well, when you look at it that way.
And which worm? I would be likely to see the worm or butterfly.
See all the way through that.
That was good. That was good. But think about it, you know, butterflies and insect. Think of that. Wow. With the future.
Yeah. with a mosquito, my friend of mine says that he believes mosquitoes are sent from the little green guys for testing humanity in doing finding out what's going on with the DNA.
Let him continue to think that way. Okay. As we well know, the main function of meditation is ... to bring the lower instrument in such condition of receptivity and vibratory response that the ego or solar angel, it's like apposition, he keeps on, you know, sometimes he differentiates, sometimes he keeps them the same, can use it and produce specific results. An instrument. This involves, therefore, it's kind of like a violinist, a great violinist, he knows the instrument is the instrument, but there's certain times in the concert when there's a merging of the player and the instrument. Those are good moments. Okay. This involves, therefore, a downflow of force from the upper levels of the mental plane, the habitat of the real man, and a reciprocal vibration emanating from man reflection, when the shadow hath responded, the reciprocal vibration. When these two vibrations are attuned and the interplay, see, attuned, that's sort of like Ray 4, and the interplay is rhythmic, and that's kind of like, Ray 7, then the two meditations proceed synchronously, and the work of magic and creation can proceed unimpeded. So there's going to be a virtuous circle, let's call it that, and there will be the proper kind of rhythm, whatever that may be. Okay. It will therefore be apparent that the brain is the physical correspondence to the force centers upon the mental plane, and that the vibration has to be and the vibration has to be consciously set up by the man when meditating. Well, how many force centers are there upon the mental plane?
Four
so far, which is solar plexus, spleen, sacrocenter, and base of the spine, all mental. You've seen that before, haven't you? You have seen it. But just for, you know, just in case we say we haven't seen it, wait a second, what happens? Go on. Okay, well, let's just make it very quick. Go here to Fellowship of Cosmic Fire. Yeah, go here. 14 windows open. Wonderful. Okay. You do, you know, you do remember four centers. But anyway, it's filled with analogic possibilities. So this is number 8, and this is... And we see here, and maybe if we made them a little bigger, that would be easier to... Yeah. And we would, this is where they are, and even a little bigger. That's it. Base of the spine, sacrocenter, solar plexus, and spleen, and the mental unit. All five are found on the same subplane. And instead of chakras on the higher three, we have the solar angels' intervention providing the same kind of energy. So. The petals, yeah. So eventually when the petals are gone, it may be that man will have vortices which can be produced upon those higher planes. And one of the... We've already seen that we can have a chakra and a unit on the same plane. The mental unit and all these chakras exist. Why should we not have a reproducible mental head center upon the same subplane where the monastic permanent atom is found? I mean, it'll be done probably in Maya Virupic fashion. In other words, when the man makes his Maya Virupa, probably all of this will be generated. Because I think he makes his Maya Virupa from the higher planes, but maybe the monastic permanent atom is very involved in making the Maya Virupa. It's very involved in creating the egoic lotus. It could be that when the Maya Virupa is made, after all, the man still has a triad. When the, you know, a master still has a triad. Maybe a monad does not still have a triad. But on the other hand, yeah, when the Buddha moved on, he left his vestures, which means, I think, he left his spiritual triad and that which could be produced from that triad available for the Christ. I have a feeling that this monastic permanent atom is very important in the concretizing of forms, because it certainly contributed mightily to the concretizing of this form. The whole egoic lotus is built on the same ray as the monastic permanent atom. So it's really, in a sense, a kind of a reflection. We don't really have the structure of the monastic permanent atom. Could it be a five-pointed star? We're told that the Buddhic permanent atom is shaped like a figure eight, and I've wondered if the atmic permanent atom isn't shaped like a triangle. And the astral permanent atom is shaped like a depressed heart center. That's what he tells us. So I think they all have their shapes, and I think they're all significant. Okay, all right. What a right. So that after lunch period. Is this strong tea? I think so. This is black tea.
Almost as good as coffee.
Potent. Thank you. The power of suggestion. Yes, Glenn. Okay. So the brain is the physical correspondence of the four centers upon the mental plane. And the vibration has to be consciously set up by the man when meditating. So in our brain, an etheric brain, the mental force centers have to be involved, and then also the vibration of the ego affecting these centers. In other words, it's quite possible, let's see how this works. We have the triad coming into the petals, but we kind of wonder if the triad touches the petals, is it possible that the triad's influence also, yes it does. Here's one. The petal goes to the sacral center. This petal, or all of them, go to the solar plexus, and presumably somewhere here, the base of the spine is connected with the red, I guess. And that's sort of a reflection rather than a correspondence. A reflection, the high is reflected in the low, the second down with the second up, and the third down with the third up. So it's not like laying one triangle upon another, it's a mirror image. So that's the way it looks here, that the atmic plane, that the sacrifice petals, being the highest petals, are reflected in the lowest chakra, the base of the spine. It'll always be the same when it comes to the middle ones, namely the love petals and the solar plexus. Those are, either way you look at it, in a correspondence where you lay one triangle on another, or in a reflection, they'll always be the same. But in this case, the lowest of the petals and the highest of the chakras in the reflection are related. Okay. Maybe we should have a deep meditation. Yeah.
I'm wondering if by force centers, it could mean the mental unit corresponding to the ultra major, the egoic lotus corresponding to the pituitary, and the monastic permanent corresponding to the pineal. Force centers as, not as chakras, but as centers of force on the mental plane.
I wonder, do we, force, physical correspondence, it will therefore be apparent that the brain is the physical correspondence to the force centers upon the mental plane, meaning the mental unit, the jewel and the lotus? No, not that. Well, maybe the monastic form of Adam. There is a correspondence of which you speak, definitely. However, in that case, it's not a reflection, it's a correspondence, isn't it? So, namely, the jewel and the lotus and the pineal are, or let's say the monastic permanent Adam and the pineal, yes, and then the jewel in that case, would that be the pituitary? What do you have in mind for the pituitary?
The egoic lotus as a whole.
I don't know, sometimes these things can work more than one way, so it's possible. Let's follow on and see what we find.
It should be apparent. It is apparent, therefore, so...
Mm-hmm. Yes, it will be apparent that the brain is the physical correspondence of the force centers upon the mental plane, and that the vibration has to be consciously set up in the man while meditating. Well, okay. He's not yet, though, talking about the monastic permanent Adam, is he? He's kind of stopping with the ego in this set of instructions.
Yeah.
He's not into the Antikarana yet. But okay, I don't doubt the correspondence. Okay. When this is effected, the man can be a conscious creator, and the work therefore proceeds in a triple manner. The force circulates via three points of centralized activity. Okay, from that circle of petals in the egoic lotus, which the ego chooses to use or is in a position to use. So a whole circle of petals is involved. And that's the top point. The egoic lotus is not the ego. Well, I think we have recognized that. The true ego can be the monad in the jewel and the lotus, accompanied by that much of the solar angel as is given to infuse the egoic consciousness. Well, we discussed that earlier this morning. So anyway, there's a triple circulation of force. Okay. We're talking about unimpeded, synchronous creation through meditation. And now we're given a method of circulation. This is a very interesting idea. There's a whole circulation of petals, circle of petals. Later he talks about just choosing one of the love petals and its connection to the throat center when we are creating protective mantras. So one of the love petals and the throat center, and then an area of force surrounding the man and holding back the Agni Suryans so they cannot attack. This is the first one. This circle of petals, from that circle of petals in the egoic lotus, which the ego chooses to use or is in a position to use. Well, unless you are a an initiative of the third degree or second degree, third degree, you're not in a position to just use the sacrifice petals as a whole circle. You are in a position to use the entire love circle once you've taken the first initiation. Because the, well, no, second initiation. Because at the end of the first initiation, the fifth petal is completely unfolded. At the end of the second initiation, the sixth petal, first initiation, the fifth petal. You can use completely. But at the third initiation, you can use the entire sacrifice tier. Because all petals, it happens rapidly, are completely unfolded. At the end of the third initiation, you can use the sacrifice tier.
So here when he says the circle of petals, it refers to the three.
Yeah, that's a tier.
Knowledge or love.
Yeah, a whole circle of knowledge, a circle of love, a circle of sacrifice. You can use all three.
When he says circle, it's really a triangle.
He oftentimes refers to a tier as a circle. If you look up circle, if you go look up circle petals and tier petals, you'll get comparable references that are both needed together. Mm-hmm. How does he describe how the solar angel manifests? One thing is a radiant angelic existence, and then as a circle with nine spokes, and then as a lotus. So one term is chosen from the lotus manifestation, one term is chosen from the wheel with nine spokes. See, that's more of a circle than petal formation. Each one of them relates to a different ray. The manifestation of the solar angel as a complete being is the first ray, the lotus is the second ray, the circle is the third ray. Three modes of manifesting the solar angel on the higher mental plane, as seen in initiation, we are told.
Which one is the
wheel is always third ray. The petals and the flower is always second ray. That leaves the first ray for the actual radiant angelic existence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the identity of the man. Okay, so now there's going to be a circulation of force from a circle of petals, and I think I'll put this in. You know that. I'll straighten it out. Second initiation, the love petal, the love circle can be used as a whole, and after the third initiation, the sacrifice circle can be used as a whole. Sued as a whole. Sued. So I think that's clear, isn't it? Because things unfold very rapidly after that point. When we come to the second initiation, we probably do not yet have a complete unfoldment of the eighth petal. But we have a movement towards unfoldment of the eighth petal. Is that complete green, or is this green dark green? Is that too dark? No, that's not too dark. That's the one we want. All right.
Darker than the green.
It's not darker than the green.
You use the next lighter green.
Okay. You mean here I did?
No, that's too dark. That looks red.
You think that's too dark? It looks black. You prefer that? I think green.
Yeah.
So well. What color sensitivity of the group?
Yeah. We want our green.
Okay. We want our green. Okay. This is conditioned by the objective in view and the state of egoic unfoldment. In other words, let's just say that a first degree initiate can use the entire knowledge circle. A second can use the entire love circle, and a third degree initiate can use the sacrifice circle. What is the objective in view? Is it to intervene in terms of knowledge, in terms of unity and love, or in terms of some form of active will or sacrifice? It is a science after all, isn't it? Yeah. We have a new appreciation for that, I'm sure. And we realize that the same kind of acuity that a scientist brings to the study of his rather involved subject has to be applied by us. And the mystical approach is all very well and good for some things, but it won't work to make a cultist of us.
Would you say that, in practical persons, we wouldn't actually say, well, I'm now going to use my such and such pedal. It's that it's a result of an activity or an intention or a white magic process that those pedals get.
I wouldn't completely disclaim your first possibility. In other words, if I had the sight, if I were in control, I might just say, just like I'm now going to use my first finger of my right hand, I might not only visualize but see and activate a particular part of my detected inner anatomy. I just think it depends on what a magician can do and what he sees. On the other hand, once he was really rolling and all of that was, you know, habituated, it might be possible to just start with the intention and the instrument just works. For our purposes, we can visualize. And he's given us many alignments we can visualize. Not that we necessarily see all these things, but, you know, in that section on the fusion of the soul and personality, he gives us three major alignments, starting from the monad, going through the triad and various kinds of petals and chakras. We can visualize those things.
Yeah.
And I think when we do, they would tend to tend to actually happen. Okay, so now the next thing is the center in the physical brain, which is active in meditation. This is also conditioned by the man's point in evolution and particular goal in mind, so it could be a physical center, such as the pineal gland, or carotid. Or there are also centers, etheric centers, within the head. Sometimes when I look at the head, I think there are 14 centers. And seven, I think there are 21 in all. You know how there's seven sons of Phohat, seven ray lords, seven spirits of darkness. It all adds up to 21. I sometimes think that there's a way of counting seven normal chakras, seven in the head chakras, seven over the head chakras. You know, sometimes you've seen this particular drawing, which could be found here. Open that up. Okay, open. Sesame. Preview. Okay, let's see if I have. Maybe I'm not in the right place. No, I'm not in the right place. I will go to the other one. Well, I know I'll find it if I just look. So I may have to go through all these things. Yeah, well, more coming. That's the one. This is that book, Laya Yoga, with its...
Did you send this text? Did you have it?
Yeah.
I want it.
These are apparently not in the head, but over and in front of the head. And they may be master centers, and they are called by very interesting triadal names. Manas, or Chitta. Indu, or Buddhi, reminds me of Indra, or Buddhi, the Indu chakra, seat of the Buddhi, which is a triadal. So it's not in the head at all. It's in, you know, it's on the way up and over till you reach the top. Then Mahanada, I'm not sure what that is, we'd have to read the book. Then the Nirvana chakra. Nirvana chakra looks very atmic to me. Okay. Then we start going to chakras that may correspond to the monadic level until we finally reach the Sahasrara chakra, which is the top chakra. And the Mahan, I wonder if that's related to the 12 petaled lotus. I'm not sure, they have a slightly different system. But finally, my impression is that not only does the chakra on the top of the head correspond to the apnic plane, but it corresponds to the logoic. In other words, all the way from to the very top. It depends on how advanced we are. But I've somehow begun to believe, although I don't know how I would prove it, that the correspondence between the great bear and the little bear is found in the head. And that the seven over the head chakras are the great bear, and the seven in the head chakras are the little bear. And then there's the whole system of chakras. Because there are certain chakras that are part of the head center, which are called the greater seven. When the applicant nears the portal, the greater seven must awaken and bring forth response from the lesser seven upon the double circle. I think we may have 21 and not just 14. But I don't know enough about how to substantiate the in the head chakras. One of the groups of chakras, I think, belongs to Vulcan. And that could be the great bear variety. Because the sun veiling Vulcan is the ruler of the great bear, the will aspect. The great bear is a first ray logos of a sevenfold constellation, and the little bear is connected with the second ray. So there's a first ray second ray relationship there, and Vulcan is a first ray planet in its soul nature, and it comes from the head and is associated with the greater seven chakras, which this Hindu system of chakras gives us a pretty graphic representation of what they must be. Yes?
I'm missing seven, so I got the over the head.
Well, this now here's the thing. This is seven. Within the head are seven,
right.
And all of these are seven.
Oh, of course.
Now, of course, if I'm wrong, and there's no chakras within the head at all, but I don't think so. I think there are chakras etherically within the head.
Exactly. That's what the brain centers.
Yeah. Well, the brain center, yeah. We know there's a third eye made of etheric stuff surrounding and pervading the pineal gland.
Yeah.
We probably have... But that's its own unique thing, because the Ajna center is connected with the pituitary gland and the crown center with the pineal gland, but there is an evoked chakra in the middle of the head, which we call the third eye.
Yesterday, I have an image of that.
Okay, we'll get to it. Yes, absolutely.
You said something about when the chakras line up with the head centers within the head, illumination takes place.
Yes.
So there's got to be that kind of...
The head is a 21 or a 14. I mean, in other words, chakra system is a 21 or a 14. Usually, 21 comes out of 14. In other words, the number two divides. For instance, we're told there are... that when you're talking about second-ray types... There's the first ray type and the second ray type of the second ray types, but that the second ray type divides and produces the third ray type. So there's an initial duality, and then the second one divides, and that produces the three, which would be the foundation of the 21. Basically, we have to get our numbers straight, we have to get our map straight, so we know where to go in our imagination or in our clairvoyance to activate what. It's all a specific science. It's just as specific as surgery, you know? I mean, if you don't know where the organs are, it's hard to be a surgeon, you know?
I think we have to have, like you said, clairvoyance. You have to be able to see them.
Yeah.
Really,
this is the orange part here is the pituitary. The blue is the pineal, and I suppose this is the carotid. It's rose color. Because the pituitary is connected with the second ray. The blue little thing coming up there like that is the pineal area and the third eye. Yes.
And below is an actual photograph of the pineal.
Okay. Fascinating. This is the pineal area with the etheric activation around it. This is the pituitary area. And presumably there is an etheric activation around that too. And I suppose this has to do with Alta Major.
It's like a little mushroom.
Looks like a canary to me.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about two different things. Yeah. She's talking about the pineal mushroom, and I'm talking about the canary carotid.
Yeah.
And he says that interplay between Sahasrara and the pineal creates the Aya Shiva, which is the next image.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's see where that Aya Shiva looks like it is. Aha, on top of the head. Now, this is interesting because... according to the, as a matter of fact, I have a compilation on three types of eyes, which I'd like to go over with you. And it differentiates the eye of the soul from the eye of Shiva. Mm-hmm. The eye of the soul is said to be in the head center,
yeah.
And the eye of Shiva in the middle of the head. So this is looking a bit more like the eye of the soul.
The one on the right, I just put in there. It's not technically anything, but... The fact that it looks both within and above, I thought that sort of illustrated that idea.
You mean this looks within and above?
The third eye, does it not look within and above?
Well, you know, that would be new to me that the third eye looks like this, but that's interesting. I didn't really realize that.
It reminded me of a journal entry of Ralph Waldo Emerson when he said... fortunate is the day when the youth discovers that above and within are synonyms.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's true. And we could be very technical about that, but I also think we can be analogic about that. And you know, the Temple of Heaven...
That's me that did the right side. It might be inaccurate, but I thought the third eye looked both within... as well as above.
It looks into the world of the soul, so I don't know. This is something to really carry in mind. Very interesting. Very interesting.
And also, let's turn up with the monad. There's a place.
But is up in or is up?
Inward and up. In.
All of my spiritual figures have had a top knot. Is that suggestive of that?
Yes, that is the thing, yeah. Like he has there. And there's Ganges River coming out all this.
Ganges?
Yeah.
And then, but the third eye is
the right.
And there, he has the moon and the sun.
Mm-hmm. The third eye also projects out from the ajna while not being the ajna.
Right.
So there's a whole question of anatomy here, plus this center right here, which is like an antenna. You know, sort of the unicorn center.
Unicorn.
So
unicorn
you are not talking about this?
No, I'm not talking about here. If you really look at how they look, the unicorn horn can come a bit higher.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the imagery, how many artists really are...
They have their own way, but there is a center here. The old lady I used to talk to, she, every once in a while she would say... Yeah. But I'm afraid I've blown it. Well, this is like an antenna.
For what? Where Trey type is telling about that his antenna.
Well, an antenna to pick up other things, you know, to tune in. Who knows? Who knows if where the thread attaches for the shela on the thread?
Yeah.
Okay. We probably have to find our own point of attachment, right? Mm. All right.
What about these?
The temples. Yeah. In your own temple. Mm-hmm. Yeah, temple, template. What? Okay. Horns of love. Well, anyway, we have to... The head is very occult. Asajuli asked the DK about the head center. He basically was mum about it. He says it's very occult, not much is given. I cannot give anything. So we have to piece all of this together from the different traditions. And probably the Hindu tradition, although it doesn't correspond exactly to what we've been studying, will give us important hints that we need.
Yeah.
There's also an eight-chakra... eight-petaled chakra in here that is of real occult significance, and DK hints at it at one point. Eight petals.
Vidanya chakra, the heart, is the eighth.
Above
the. Above, it's not the heart.
Above the heart.
It might be between the heart and throat. And what did you call it?
It's called Vidanya.
Vidaja.
Vidaja.
Or,
how do you spell it? D-A-J-A. Vidaja.
Okay, well, that's found in this book. In the book on Laya Yoga. Yeah. And DK also hints at the existence of such a chakra. And I probably have lost the reference, but it has. And when I talked to a student of this book, he said, well, I wouldn't say too much about that because it has a lot to do with practical yoga. So we have to trace hidden factors which are hinted at and which are appearing in various texts.
The first one used to talk about the high heart.
The high heart.
The high heart.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
The higher soul. You know, when you say about this hidden chakra, it's also true in the Kabbalah, that on that higher spiritual triad, there is a hidden
Hidden point.
Hidden sphere. That's the relationship between when these different spheres come together, just like when, you know, two principles come together to create a third.
Right, an evocation. An evocation.
Yeah.
8 and 12, petals surrounding the jewel. 8 and 12 circles of petal, on the mental plane. This is interesting. The significance of the four circles of petals, four circles in the egoic lotus, and the eight circles of 12 petals each in etheric lotuses on the mental plane is of great importance. Eight circles of 12 petals each in the etheric lotuses on the mental plane. Of course, you can pretty well look at the head center and say there might be eight petals of 12 circles each, and add a zero, you get your 960. You know, because 8 times 12 is 96, and you have the 960 petals plus the 12. But on the mental plane, this is a very occult hint, and rather obscure.
And if there's lotuses, there's more than one on the mental plane, or are you talking
only? Well, there are on the mental plane already. And why does he call them etheric? Because they're on the etheric subplane of the mental plane. Yeah, and the eight circles of 12 each, in the etheric lotuses on the mental plane, I think this is extremely obscure and very interesting. Because we know something of the structure of the mental, well, or do we? Maybe we don't know about the structure of the lotuses on the mental plane. And maybe this is the hint as to their structure. But are there eight? And why eight? Except it's a Mercury number. Anyway, there's a lot of things buried in here that probably high initiates would find useful.
It's very valuable.
Yeah. You think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's on page 861 for further reference. All right. So what if we can't connect it to anything? Nevertheless.
Yeah, the virtue of our very nature is the connector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's it linking to?
It's definitely linking to the head center, I'll tell you that. Because the head center is built on the structure of 8 and 12. Yeah. So you know, could there be like eight circles and some sort of ninth point which involves the 12 major petals? 960, and then with each 9, each 12 is a 120. Each 12 is 120. Or we can do it the other way. I think that's the way to do it. Because connected with each one of these eight circles, there has to be how many 12s go into 96?
Eight.
Yeah, so we need every 12 is 10 times more then 12, 120. And that would give us the full 960 petals. Probably it would be in the way we subdivide the petals in these circles. And remember, we're dealing with the head center, so the number is 10. See, the heart is 12, so the heart within the head is 12. Man is 10, devas are 12. So everything to do with the heart is feminine and 12. Everything to do with the number 1 or 10 is masculine. So I think that we can divide each one of these petals by 10, perhaps. Maybe they have 10 subdivisions. And then we would find our way to get the full 960 petals. Again, you have 15. It's a Kumaric number. 9 and 6 are 15. It's the beginning and the end, in a way, 9 and 6. I mean, in other words, 9 is all about descent into... No, 6 is about descent into matter, and 9 is about reascent out of matter. It's the Cancer sign, made vertical. Anyway, you know, we could brainstorm on this kind of thing and see what we could come up with, but there are subtle aspects of anatomy, just like aspects of the human body were not discovered for a long time. People thought all kinds of things about the human body, right? Until Harvey came along with blood circulation, and other people learned all kinds of things over hundreds of years, and thus it is for us with respect to esoteric, etheric anatomy, subtle anatomy. So, you know, just think, DK is an expert in all of these things, knowing the placement and the function, the capacity, the degree of strength. Makes you kind of want to study. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I wish I had more time for study, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to watch out for those libraries on the inner planes. They're a trap, I hear. You might go in and not get out for a long time. Okay, we started out with the circle of petals that the initiate could use. We went to the center in the physical brain, which is active in meditation, and this is also conditioned by the man's point in evolution. It could be a physical center, or there are also etheric centers in the head, and that's what led us off into our latest tangent. Thirdly, the center of force generated by man upon the lower mental plane as he proceeds to form the necessitated thought form and to sweep into activity those builders who can respond to the vibrations set forth. This is likewise conditioned by the strength of his meditation, the fullness of the note sent forth by him, and the strength of his initiated vibration. So let's see what this center can be, the center of force. Now, is the center of force the tiny thought form, or is it something else? Because we know that the meditating man in the brain, in cooperation with the solar angel, is producing a tiny center of force on the mental plane. Is this what it is?
Yes.
Okay, hence the first thing the solar angel does is to form a triangle, consisting of himself, the man on the physical plane, and the tiny point of force which is the result of their united endeavor. So that's what it is. It is the point of light, the product of the labors of the four. That's what we're talking about. And there's a circulation through that from the man to from the solar angel to the man, and then to the tiny center of force. Okay. Okay, it will be a value of students of meditation to ponder upon this procedure and to study the correspondence between it, the work, and the work of the solar logos as he created the heavens and the earth. Do any thoughts come to you about that?
I have a picture of it.
No way.
Well, I mean,
is it coming?
Yeah, it's the very last one. You're almost there.
Looks like
next there.
Okay. Birth of the sun and the greater solar thought form. Okay.
Can you say what again?
That's what it's talking about, the logos creating the point of tension between the higher and the lower.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that actually is, in a way, the solar system. Because the solar logos is creating from the higher cosmic mental plane.
Right. Well, that's what the solar system on this side was supposed to represent. Mm-hmm.
And he has to touch a point in the three lower worlds which correspond to his brain. And this is throughout can he have a brain without a... Mm-hmm. Yes, well, you see, he has to create something... okay. His creation is on the lower cosmic mental plane. That's the correspondence, right? So the ego works from the higher mental plane, therefore the solar logoic ego works from the higher mental plane. He stimulates the point within the meditating man, which is in the brain, and therefore where would the brain of the solar logos be found? Does the brain have solids, liquids, and gases in it? No, it doesn't. So therefore, the brain of the solar logos is found where in our planar system?
Three worlds.
Mm-hmm. In the what?
In the three worlds. In the three lower worlds. Because the mental plane is gaseous, the liquids are found in the astral plane, and the densest plane of all is the mineral structure. Then, the point of light, which is the product of the labors of the two, just when I was getting warmed up.
Yeah, that's why it's going to be too hot.
Oh,
yeah.
Feeling good now. You may be asleep, but I'm ready. Okay, and then the point of light, which is the product of the labors, or the that tiny point of light, which is the incipient thought form, is found on the lower cosmic mental plane. What is it? What is the point of light for a man? In other words, with the point of, when a man creates on the lower mental plane, what's he creating?
Thought form.
A thought form for what purpose? Right. Yeah. Generally for the egoic intention, right? Okay, so somehow, in the larger scheme of things, the thought form is created on the lower cosmic mental plane to work out on all the cosmic subplanes in the world of agony, which is the lower 18 cosmic subplanes. That's the world of agony. Okay, anyway, he says there will be a value for us to ponder upon this procedure and study the correspondence between it and the work of the solar logos as he created the heavens and the earth. What are the heavens and the earth in this context? Generally, Uranus is called the heavenly one. Heavens, how interesting. Where is heaven located for a man? On the lower mental plane, fourth level. So in between. So that's the possibility of heavens.
I think either Besson or Leadbeater actually label each of the seven subplanes just opposite. It's like seventh is highest.
Uh-huh. Opposite. Well, anyway, the one in the middle is four, whichever way you
right.
Got it. And that's where we're told that Devachan is located, but the heaven of the average Christian is not located there, we're told. It's located on the
astral
third subplane of the astral plane, and the hell of the average Christian?
On
the eighth subplanet.
Oh, that'd be good. Boy, that'd be really super hell. This is just seventh. That's bad enough, right?
He's going to say eighth, though. He says that the hell of the Christian is on the eighth, and it's an obscure something.
Hmm. Yeah. An obscure something.
Oh,
the heaven of the average Orthodox, oh, it's the Orthodox Christian. Okay, it's not the esoteric Christian. Of the average Orthodox Christian or believer of any faith. So it's certain names being of a third order form the heaven of the average Orthodox Christian or believer of any faith. Another grouping of the seventh order form the hell for the same class of thinker. So those orders are related to the planes.
What was the base?
Yeah, seventh subplane of the mental plane. No, of the astral plane. Of the astral plane. Sorry, astral plane. Yes, and they are below the threshold. So hell is a no-go. I mean, we're not supposed to go to hell. Heaven is okay. It's on the third subplane.
Third.
One, two, three. It's okay.
Average
Orthodox. Average Orthodox.
So the heaven of sitting in the lower mental plane is no.
Well, the heaven, but the Devachan, which is a place where you take the unpolished stones from the quarry of your life and polish them up to build higher faculty, is on the fourth or the highest etheric subplane of the mental plane. Highest etheric subplane, right? In other words, let's point this out. You know, it's not hard to see once we know what we're looking at. That's it. So the average Christian heaven is here. No. Devachan is here. Christian heaven is here. Christian hell is here.
Wow. So you say Christian heaven, is it where the triad is?
No. It's on the throat center area.
So
where is the esoteric heaven?
Well, that's really... This is the third heaven. This is seventh heaven. Logot plain.
May I ask, what does the deva have to do with heaven? What does the deva have to do with hell?
Because what are the forms that are found in those particular dimensions? They're all built of the deva substance.
He's a shining place. Deva is a shining
one. But not all of them necessarily shine. It depends on, that's the original meaning, a god, a shining one. But let's just say that the kind of configurations you find in the third heaven or the average are made of beings of this kind. In other words, every type of deva forms a different atmosphere within different dimensions. So some very low devas are forming the kinds of ugly forms you find in the hell of the average believer. Probably not only Christian, but you know, there are many people who believe in hell of a certain kind, with its, all of its monstrous forms. I'm sure that there are descriptions of hell in the Hebrew and in the Muslim groups as well. After all, if there's a paradise, there's something opposite as well. Isn't there? The problem with these religions is they're entirely dualistic.
But do you believe in hell? What is your image of hell? So how do you...
Being unemployed and unemployment runs out. Physical plan.
Yeah.
But you know, that has been honestly changing me. Because when I was small, I was thinking about what kind of thing is the hell, because they were talking about me. But yes, nowadays I don't think about hell.
Well, it exists. These lower.
No, but in that sense, you know.
There's not eternal damnation.
Getting lost in the astral plane. Yeah. You're discriminating, getting lost in the astral plane and getting trapped there. Yeah. The lower level.
Sure.
When you have certain,
I was just interested of hearing your how you are seeing nowadays. Mm. How many you think about
it? I haven't bought a ticket
every
yet.
Day,
I have a peculiar question. When he knew he was going to die, all the stuff he said, he was going to take LSD, and catapult himself. And he was a big artist.
Who?
Aldous Huxley.
Catapult himself to the lower worlds?
No, he thought that by taking LSD he would create some kind of thought form. Mm-hmm. I mean, what could that possibly be about?
I just think that it sensitizes the physical mechanism to let in the astral worlds that are already there.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would have to say, from personal experience, astral worlds come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't know what you're
going to
get.
Right. Is it a yet?
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
I said you don't know what you're going to get.
No. And when we have nightmares, right now, what plane are we accessing? Even right now. Mm-hmm. And when we go to the horror movies,
right.
What plane are the creators working on? You know, when they create these horrible tents and horrible forms, what are they tuning in on? It's right here now, isn't it? Okay. All right. Okay.
And lower mental.
Lower mental or the lower astral?
I think the lower astral.
Lower astral.
Well, they obviously have to use their mind to do it.
Yeah.
But where are the images coming from?
Yeah.
I mean, and the impulse to present those images, is it their own purge or is it simply greed?
Or, I don't know. Some people like to scare other people, you know?
Yeah, what's that all?
It's fun, you know?
And profitable. Extremely.
Fun and profit can be had, okay. Well, okay, yes.
I was going to say, I'm remembering some of the information that came through the stuff material about different drugs and what the hint there was that anything that came from a natural plant was something that the human organism could work with.
Uh-huh.
But anything that was man-made was something that would literally tear open your energy field and allow you to be
victimized or possessed
by something else around.
Well, as with all things, it has to be tested, you know, probably. The highest and the lowest meet. Spirit and matter were brought into contact with each other. We're talking about, in this case, spirit is the ego and matter is the brain. And the consequence of this interplay was the birth of the sun, or the great solar thought form. See, it's a little hard to find where that brain is, because you kind of think that within the solar system, the brain must necessarily exist. So it's as if the solar thought form had to be there beforehand in order to access the brain to build the solar thought form. But whatever the brain is for the solar logos, this is, he's telling us that this is the way the solar system was created, just the way a personality is created. Now, when an ego creates a personality, does it have to create anything on the higher mental plane to do that? Or does it just, you know, create a gradual descent of energy which fleshes itself out? In other words, there's sort of a 1-2 and a 3 in the human magical process. But when the ego starts to create, what is its bottom point, you know, in order to create this thing called man? That's a little, you know, it doesn't analogously line up entirely.
That doesn't for exactly the same purpose or same reason you were talking about the solar logos. There's not a brain there.
No.
To
receive, no. So it's a little bit of a problem here. Sun's called sun of necessity, sense of the entire solar system. Sun can also mean the soul aspect of the solar logos, yes. The central spiritual sun is the monadic aspect. The sun itself is the base of the spine center of the solar logos, so it has been called that. Actually, the physical sun has been called by a number, it's given a number of attributions. The base of the spine is one of them, mm-hmm. of the solar logos. And maybe the spleen is another. You know, we could say, I think I can look this up very quickly. I don't want to get to physical, sun, base, spine. Well, there we go. In the physical body, we have the fires of the lower nature of the animal plane centralized in the base of the spine. They are situated at a spot which stands in relation to the physical body as the physical sun to the solar system. So there's a hint there about the base of the spine. And I don't know if there's anything else. Maybe that's the only one. Uh-huh. It relates to the lower center over here. This is an intricate occult study. I think this is about Earth. This is an integral occult study and is concerned with the response of the etheric body to the incoming energies. It relates finally the lower center at the base of the spine to the highest center, the head center. This is a correspondence to the relation of the Earth to the Sun. Think this out. So that's the base of the spine, the Earth as the base of the spine. That's one meaning. And there's another place for the spleen. I think I remember it. That the physical sun and the spleen are connected. I can just try it. Oh, there's too many here. Where was I?
306?
I hope so, because I lost track. Physical body. Okay, in the physical body we find the fires of the lower nature, the animal plane. Is this what we just read? No. At the base of the spine. They are situated, yeah, in a spot. Okay, the central point of heat radiates in all directions using the spinal column as its main artery, but working in close connection with certain central ganglia, wherever located, and having a special association with sphincter. So that's not it, but it is interesting.
Okay.
That was 55. We already studied this 5 years ago.
Oh.
Does it look new? We all have different definitions of eternity, don't we? Now what's this? This is the vital and magnetic fluid which radiates from the sun and which is transmitted to man's etheric body through the agency of certain Davidic entities of very high order. It passes through their bodies and emitted as powerful radiations which are applied directly through certain plexi in the uppermost part of the physical body, the head and the shoulders, and passes down to the etheric correspondence of the physical organ, the spleen. No, this is all about good conditions in California. Well, okay. But anyway, I seem to remember that the sun and the spleen have a close correspondence. But they do there. Mm-hmm. The spleen, the organ of prana, or physical vitality coming from the sun, but that's not it. Okay, well, it'll take a little more care than I can give it at the moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, anyway, a great thought form is created, and there's enough analogy between how the solar logos works and how the man works. In the three worlds, man, the lesser deity within his limits, proceeds along analogous lines. The three who are illumined by the light of the one, and this is it. If we want to understand what it means, when the shadow hath responded, the work in meditation deep the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, and the greater light illuminates the three. So the three who are illumined by the light of the one are the three persons of the lower triad. The mental body, the astral body, and the physical body. It's almost as if the elementals are the persons. The sun also has three persons. You've seen the map where these three persons of the Trinity surround the solar logos. Page 1238 in your Cosmic Fire book. I'll just go there and I'll show you the three persons of the Trinity. That's it. There they are. And they're interlocking. These are the three persons of the Trinity, with the second in the uppermost position, fittingly so. So we, this in a way would be then the greater light, and the light of these three is the lower light, and there's a whole magical process presumably between these three. Although these are also called kind of cosmic logoi, or what do they call? First logo, second logo, third logo. It's not cosmic logoi. Okay. Okay, so they, with the illuminator, make the four referred to, and thus becomes apparent the microcosmic tetractys. Okay, so who is the microcosmic tetractys? What is it? The one above and the three below.
The soul above.
illuminating.
Right.
The shadow.
That's right. Yes, the shadow or its reflection, depending on how it is voiced. Okay, the two rules above form the esoteric basis of all meditation and need to be carefully studied if results are to be achieved. So why don't we repeat those two rules at this point, then we'll go on and see what white magic has to say about it. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, and in meditation deep communicates with his reflection, communicates Mercury, Gemini. Rule two, when the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward. We might ask to what end. The greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. Do they meet on any kind of altar, or does the greater light absorb the lower three? And then the work of the four will be to produce the point of light on the lower mental plane, which is the new creation coming forth. Lower light, higher light, and the created light,
so
which is the new creation.
My sense is, what do you think they meet concretely? I mean, I was thinking in the third eye,
mm-hmm.
inside the head, in the face, we're bringing, you know, the three lower, I'm using DNS, that's a particular, because we bring it to the Agnes Center, we integrate the personality.
I think we have to wait for that. I think when the thought form descends to the astral body, into and gets its fire sheath and then breaks into the physical body, I think that's when the head mechanism gets involved.
No, but now then, where do you think they meet?
Higher and lower mental plane. I think they meet, everything meets on the lower mental plane where the point is being created. This is still magic for the mental plane, and I think everything that's being built so far is on the mental plane, even though you are sitting here with your physical apparatus, you're still working on the mental plane.
And where do you visualize it when you...
Maybe the fourth subplane. Oh, well, you know, then it depends on where you visualize the fourth subplane. Mm-hmm. Maybe somehow within the head, but not within the apparatus of the ethers itself. In other words, something far subtler than any etheric apparatus in the head. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking about that. We have this phrase where land, air, and water meet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place where magic.
That's around the pineal gland.
Mm-hmm. That's just where that.
That's air. That's air.
That's where.
But that is the eighth rule. See, so far we're up on the mental plane, and later we have to stand in the ethers and direct the whole process so that it actually manifests. But it's not yet.
Going back,
yeah,
40 pages or so,
yes.
There's a statement in Cosmic Fire that is very clear statement about how we're not now talking about how the soul illuminates the mind, brings revelation or whatever, but
magical
how
process.
A thought form is materialized within the three worlds.
Yeah.
And the process is from the soul to the etheric brain, and then it redirects it up to the mental plane.
Yeah, it's even, there are two meditators working simultaneously, and one of them is working in the physical brain even, and the other is supervising and stimulating. But the point where the work has to be done is on the mental plane itself, apparently.
Yes, but that's the second. That's why it's where land, air, now we're on the mental plane, water, the astral.
Well, let's see, when we get to Rule 8, you know, the midway spot, which is neither point, which is neither dry nor wet, spot must provide the standing place where on his feet are set. When water, land, and air meet, there is the place for magic to be wrought. So it's the astral plane, the dense physical plane, and the etheric is the air.
Okay.
in this particular case.
Yeah. Here's the paragraph I was thinking of. It will be apparent, therefore, that man's ability to create in mental matter grows as he treads the path. He needs to remember that, from the angle from which we are studying, we are not considering the power of the ego to produce forms on the mental plane, but the ability of the physical plane man to create upon the mental plane those vehicles for energy which, when set in motion by the conscious will produce certain specific effects upon the physical plane. This is brought about by the egoic energy passed down the sutratma to the physical brain, and then retransmitted back to the mental plane, plus or minus that which has been gained or lost in the process.
Right. And what he's saying in the beginning is he's not talking about the ego creating the personality as the thought form. He's talking about man as the creator under the influence of the ego creating his own thought form. And that idea, the physical brain is very much emphasized. He says physical, he doesn't say etheric in this particular case. And yeah, that idea of retransmission seems reasonable enough, but let's just say at a certain point both of them are concentrating on what is created.
Yeah, on the, on just the because it's such a funny point. It's a very clear point made in NS also, and it's so counterintuitive.
The
higher and the lower makes sense coming together, but how that works in a practical sense.
What page was that?
Just where we started today, 962.
962.
Okay, now look, let's play with this too. He has a lot to say about this in White Magic. So I just need to find it. Okay. It should say TWM, but it doesn't. So let me do this and go here to Fellowship of Cosmic Fire. 19 windows open. I'm getting good here. Pretty soon the whole thing will just grind to a halt. Right.
Microsoft Corporation
Okay. So TWM 2. All right. When the shadow has responded, meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. Okay, he has here hindrances to occult study and the overcoming of hindrances. But we'll try to pick out a few things here. We can't look at the whole business. Maybe I already have picked out a few things. This rule is one of the most difficult in the book, and yet one of the most comprehensive. It will take some time rightly to handle it. We have in it the interesting illustration of the microcosmic correspondence to the macrocosm. It can be elucidated in two ways. Okay. Reference is made to the greater light, which illuminates the three, and secondly, to the throwing upward of the lower light. The greater light is that of the soul. Wait a second, I don't like this font. Okay. The greater light is that of the soul, who is light itself, illuminating the manifestation of the threefold personality. Herein lies the correspondence of the macrocosm as it is symbolized for us in God, the manifesting light of the solar system. So it's almost like the solar system is the threefold personality. The solar system is three and one, or one and three, three persons of the Trinity, and maybe we are too, three and one and one and three. And the light of the Logos illuminates the whole. The lower light is that which is hidden within the human being on the physical plane. Now, this is a different idea of the lower light. Because earlier we just read, what did we just read?
Physical, body, mental, astral.
Yeah, when he said what the lower light was in number
three
six.
Persons of the lower triad.
Is that how he described it? Okay, so I'm just going to look. Okay, and the next one. Is that all we've got? I can't find it again. Anyway.
You just had it there.
I did?
Before you clicked.
I did? That. Yeah, but that's in the... That, yeah, so... Okay, the light, what did it say? Repeat it again then.
It says the three who are illuminated by the light of the one are the three persons of the lower triad, the mental body, astral body, and the physical body.
But he doesn't say what the lower light per se is, does he?
And that again,
does he say that that is where the lower light is found? Because now he's going to elaborate in a different way.
He didn't say that. Just that describing the lower
three. Well, seems same.
So in other words, well, that which is illuminated are the lower three, but the lower light, per se, is now what is going to be described. Are illumined by the light of the one, the three persons of the Trinity. That's it. Okay. That's it. Strengthen the point of light. Okay, so let's go over here and see what it says. And this is... It's hard going, I know, but just hang in there. All right. The greater light is that of the soul and illuminating the personality. The lower light is that which is hidden within the human being on the physical plane. So this is, you know, we can call this dark light, probably. Cancer, maybe. This light, at a certain stage of man's experience, is awakened throughout the physical body and blends eventually with the greater light. The light and life of God Himself may emanate from the central spiritual sun, namely the monad of the logos, of the monad of the planetary logos, but it is only as the light within the solar system itself is awakened and aroused that there will come that eventual blazing forth which will typify the glory of the sun shining in its strength. Okay, so we're going to see what this lower light is. It seems to be physical. He does talk about a certain type of light hidden in physical substance which has to be evoked into radiance. It's a Vulcan idea. Vulcan does this, and Mars is made to shine. Similarly, the light of the soul may emanate from the monad, but it is only as the light within the little system directed by the soul is awakened and aroused that there will come the eventual shining forth of the Son of God. Now, on what planes does a solar system exist? Well, yeah, it's on the cosmic physical plane, and therefore it is physical. So in other words, anything beyond this, anything beyond cosmic dense and cosmic etheric is not of the solar system. The solar system is etheric and dense. It's physical. Because when he talks about it, this is on the cosmic astral plane beyond the solar system. He does that all the time. So the solar system itself is an etheric, physical construction. So when he's talking about this lower light, he's centering in the physical plane for some reason. And we're going to try to see what that is. In these instructions, however, we are dealing primarily with the microcosm and the light within it, and we shall not enlarge upon macrocosmic analogies. For the macrocosm, and he does seem to be focusing, is he focusing especially on the dense physical plane? We have to look at that. Is he focusing on the dense physical plane? Okay. Let's see. In considering the second rule, we must note that a conscious relation has been established between the soul and its shadow, the man on the physical plane. Both have been meditating. The students would do well to note this and to remember that one of the objectives of the daily meditation is to enable the brain and mind to vibrate in unison with the soul as it seeks in meditation deep to communicate with its reflection. So let us take that to heart. This is why we do it.
And that's why we do it in the morning, right?
That's why we do it. So, you know, there's a whole rhythm here of availability and accessibility. We're very much out of rhythm in our life in many ways. But when we do hold classes and we do have, you know it's amazing how structured education really is. You know, even in our normal education system, the bell rings, the class proceeds, it's over, the bell rings again, the next class. It's very much sequential Saturn seventh grade. But that's not all bad. You know, maybe you can work with pure spontaneity when you are a very highly developed being, but in the beginning you've got to get your structure going so that you can have rhythmic impacts to sensitize, right? Okay. The correspondence of this relation or synchronizing vibration is interesting. Okay. Soul, man on the physical plane. Soul, man on the physical plane, mind, brain, pineal gland, pituitary gland. So is this it? Okay, this is something like it here, isn't it? How it goes? Is that how it goes? Because I don't have it in the book. Soul, man on the physical plane. Oh, that's white magic. No,
yeah.
Okay, soul, mind, pineal gland. Man on the physical plane, brain, pituitary body. Well, these are pairs of opposites in a way, aren't they? So, you know, you have a very high pairs of opposites. You have maybe a middle pair, or at least mind and brain, and pineal gland and pituitary. Pineal gland in the middle of the head, and pituitary body farther down, a little lower. The relation also between the centers and the synchronization is interesting. And in it is epitomized the evolution of the race as well as the racial unit map. Okay. Head center, base, spine, heart, solar plexus, throat center. We're familiar with that. In the above lies a hint for the more advanced student, and he is one who hesitates modestly so to regard himself. It is also symbolized for us in the relation between the eastern and western hemispheres and between those great bodies of truth we call religion and science. Okay. Mind and brain. See, these who are on the same level, pineal gland and pituitary gland, same level. The others are the soul and the whole man on the physical plane, presumably the mind, an aspect of the soul's mechanism, and the brain, an aspect of the physical mechanism, and the other two are here. Soul, mind, and that part of the brain which can respond to the soul, Descartes said, the soul is seated in the pineal gland. He was actually quite correct. So that first group looks quite accurate. You know, soul, mind, brain. Man on the physical brain, plane, maybe the personality, his physical brain, and his pituitary body, which is the organ of the personality, isn't it? Just the way the pituitary body embodies the entire personality, the pineal gland embodies the soul, or at least the organ of the soul. As in the center is the personality, center at the top of the head is the soul. There must be a union. There must be a union also between the pineal and the pituitary. There must be a union between soul and personality as well. Yes.
DK says that humanity is the brain of the planetary logos in some place. So that's another interesting analogy, hierarchy in humanity.
Yeah, heart and brain?
No, hierarchy. DK says hierarchy is the head center of humanity in a sense also.
Okay, like that. I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm, sure, yeah, that is interesting. But then there's also heart center and throat center analogies.
The soul and the man and the brain, you know, the man on the physical brain, yeah. The hierarchy is the one impressing humanity.
Yeah.
Humanity is the one that takes that impression and then creates that point of light on the mental plane and begins to create in the image of that impression.
So you have hierarchy, humanity, and its creative product.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, you know, Yeah, in a way you also have, let's take the whole thing. You have pneumonikaios, purpose, hierarchy, plan, humanity, reflection of the plan. It all starts with the pneumonikaios, really starts with Shambhala, really. Yeah. Then pneumonikaios gets the purpose, presents it to the custodians who are the hierarchy. They formulate a plan, ethnic in nature. It descends into the mind of humanity, which creates its own replica. And then we have the working out of the purpose as the plan. Yeah, okay.
And so we're saying that the purpose this time is to redeem the first solar system's matter.
That is the ultimate solar logoic purpose, and to also to fit with greater exactitude as a heart center in a cosmic logos. Probably the purpose has a lot to do with achieving solar logoic initiation. The immediate initiation ahead of our solar logos is which initiation, cosmically considered?
Third.
He's taken the second cosmic initiation. He's working on a fourth minor initiation taking place in our planetary scheme. His third cosmic initiation is in front of him, just like the Earth's second cosmic initiation is in front of it. Check out page 384 in Cosmic Fire. That's where you see that. So we're trying to become a transfigured solar system. That, you know, and in a big way, the theme of the light of the cosmic transfiguration is our purpose. And we have to work with all these little planetary schemes to make that happen. And one of the big things that's preventing it is the backward drag of the previous solar system, and that's being worked out on our planetary scheme now, where he is taking a kind of fourth initiation of a lower kind to our planetary... here's my intuition on this. When our solar logos takes the fifth minor initiation in a series of nine, he will also take the third cosmic initiation, making of him a transfigured being. And he will probably take the fifth initiation on the planetary scheme Venus. His ultimate goal is to have four or five cosmic initiations in this solar system. Four for sure, five maybe. And he hasn't yet achieved three. So different planetary schemes are going to be active in inducing or giving him a field of expression for working out these initiations. Sirius probably has a similar series, but has taken its fifth minor, therefore corresponding with its third major. Sirius is transfigured. So there's no evil in the lower sense. But our sun is not, our solar logos is not transfigured. He's still emotionally polarized, even though it may be higher emotion. He's a cosmic aspirant.
The drag of the previous solar system is in fact that form matter is so inspiring to God that God gets caught up in it and can't get out.
But he certainly was caught up on it in the previous solar system, and now it's a hangover. It's come and has not been redeemed because the previous solar system didn't fully work out. There's always a leftover residue. And the crisis that we are experiencing on Earth right now is, in my view, the confrontation of the previous and the present solar system's patterns. And right here on our little planet, we have those that are representing the perpetuation of the previous solar system, namely the Black Lodge and all those that adhere to it. And we have those who are representing the new pattern of the present solar system. And it's all happening right here and right now. And that's why we have such a terrible conflict on this planet. And maybe when the judgment day comes, the final working out of that issue will occur.
And it doesn't help that, what is it, all disciples are unconscious black magicians.
Until the fourth. Well, you know, if you want to look at that, let's say psychologically, it means that we still have egocentrism until the fourth initiation. even the third degree initiate feels pretty good about his causal body, you know. So there's still some limited sense of identity here, which is blown apart at the fourth degree, and so the not my will but thine be done is really in place in its initial phase at the fourth degree. By the time we reach the sixth degree, it's really in place because Christ could say it. Jesus could say, not my will but thine be done, and mean it in a certain range. You know, I will give my life. But the Christ says it at the sixth degree and says, okay, Father, your method of redeeming the planet, not mine. It's a different, but the principle is the same, but the scope is different. Okay.
Where does the Sirian energy come into play for us at this time?
It's behind every initiation that we take. And it abstracts the consciousness from form. It burns away attachment. That's what Sirius does. Yeah.
We're trying to learn to become white magicians. We're in training as white magicians so that we can manifest the plan. There's one statement of the plan which is so practical. I think it's useful to throw into the mix. It says, humanity has now reached a point in development where there is a definite grasp of the plan of the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Call it brotherhood, sharing, internationalism, unity, or what you will. It's in discipleship in the New Age, it's in telepathy and the spirit vehicle. But it brings it down to such a
right.
Understandable, something we can really understand and work towards.
Mm. Unity, brotherhood, internationalism, non-separatism, mutual support,
right
human relations, yeah. It's Venus, it's Libra, it's Aquarius, it's Gemini. You know, liberty, equality, fraternity, the three air signs. Yeah, it's pretty practical, isn't it? Really. We should learn to apply it to each other, and then by example, others will see that it can be applied. Yeah. And we really have to meditate in such a way, and we really have to send our thought forms out in such a way that these patterns become more impactful on humanity. We have a big meditative responsibility, I think. Not just worrying about getting ourselves into shape, assuming we're reasonably in shape, actually turning outward and inward at the same time and making sure that humanity gets these thought forms. And that they make their impact, you know. Like Master Moria says, half the world thinks, the other half carries it out. So we have a responsibility here. Yeah.
One thing that impressed me with the wisdom gathering that some of us attend with the Seder Kranz work is what impressed me was that the group actively formulated thought forms and actively meditated them out to humanity
yep.
in a very, very structured, active way, and I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, that's good, and that has to be done on a regular basis with trained groups. So that's a good direction. It's just like what hierarchy does in a way, you know. We can do that, and it must be done. Okay, so there's a hint up here for the more advanced student, and though we do not regard ourselves as such, we have been attempting to understand what that hint might be. Okay. It is Eastern and Western hemispheres, and between the great bodies of truth we call religion and science. Somehow, the Eastern is the subjective, even though when you look to the East, it looks pretty materialistic at this time. But Eastern is subjectivity, Western is objectivity, religion is subjectivity, science is objectivity. We always associate science with the West, right? And religion with the East in a fundamental way. Religion, the light comes from the East.
It's going to be flipping.
It's flipping. Yeah, we actually, if you look at the West, you know, the Occident, our soul and personality ray are both soft line, aren't they? The personality ray of the Occident is ray 4, the soul ray is ray 2. The personality ray of the East is ray 3, materialism. Its soul ray is ray 4. So, in a way, I think we're going to see this more and more as the two great first great powers, India and China, rise. And we're going to see that third rate personality. And we're going to see maybe, you know, so far that which is red is materialistic. You know, we do have state-sanctioned materialism in China. India, though, probably will never go with the materialism entirely. They have a fourth-ray personality. We're told that Confucius is coming to help this matter, and that disruption will be caused. A member of the hierarchy is emerging. They've got it all pretty well planned, you know. So, you know, what is it?
The plan keeps changing.
Yeah, that's the nature of plans, but some of them, you know, are of a larger scope. You know, that Confucius will probably emerge is probably very true, you know. And that certain of the masters who are intending to externalize will externalize is probably, you know, it's the when of it that's very...
Confucius will emerge in China, so we come back to...
I think it will counter the materialism, is what I think. Yeah. And I think, now think about this, that the fourth ray comes in 2025 on its monadic aspects and rules the soul of the Orient. So we can maybe expect a less materialistic and more intuitive approach, and maybe a more bridging approach from the soul. On the other hand, the Occident, with its fourth ray, can be engaged in conflict, you know, and the second ray is what will be required, and the United States should play a big role with its second ray Aquarian soul in helping to harmonize this situation in the West. But we're not there yet, obviously. Okay, let's move on. The life of meditation proceeds, and the rapport between the soul and its triple instrument becomes steadily closer, and the resulting vibration more powerful. The resulting vibration is pretty well that little creation that is going to appear on the mental plane. I'm afraid my may need to get my... Okay. More powerful. How many lives this will take depends on various factors, which are too numerous to be mentioned here, but which the student will find it useful to consider. Let him list the factors which he feels he needs to take into account as he seeks to decide his evolutionary standpoint. Now, have I jumped some pages here, or is this the next page? Is this the next page in White Magic? Because sometimes I cut out sections.
Oh, I can check.
Were we on 74 before? Or did I cut out? Yep, we were. That's good. We're good. Okay. The result of this response is a reorientation of the lower man, the lower light is thrown upward, in order to produce a synthesis of the three and the one, so that the four may proceed. Now, if you are a personality not integrated with your soul, the four are not working. If you are in constant touch with your ego, soul, solar angel, the four, and you are an integrated personality, then the four are working. Mm-hmm. How do you feel in your life? Is this, you know, are the four at work, or do you just feel like a unified being that's working on the basis of three? You know. Okay, well, it's easier said than done. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Here you have a reflection consummated in the microcosm of that which the solar logos started, the sacred four of the cosmos. So I presume that means the whoopsie, I'm off my base here. Okay, that's what it is. Okay, one, two, three. Okay, the solar logos as and the three persons of the Trinity. I assume that's the sacred four. Macrocosm to be considered. And by the way, when you talk about the macrocosm, You generally do not mean the planetary logos, even though he is much larger than whatever we are. You're always almost going to the solar logoic level. That is the macrocosm. Okay. Right. Man, in his turn, becomes the sacred four, spirit, and the three of manifestation, but in this case, ego represents spirit. It's funny that he says spirit, he didn't say soul, but we get the idea, the higher spirit-soul idea. Four words should be pondered upon here. Communication, response, reorientation, and union. Communication is rule one, response is rule two, and I presume that the, yeah, rule three is reorientation and rule four is union. All right, the various rules are this. First, four rules. The old commentary expressed in the following terms. Aha. When communion is established, words are forthwith used, and mantric law assumes its rightful place, provided that the one communicates the words and the three remain in silence. To will, to know, to dare, and to keep silent. So we're told that the personality dares, but the three vehicles must keep silence. And the will of the greater one is communicated. Now, later we're going to find out that the magical words which would allow us to manipulate all these lesser devas are indeed communicated by the soul, by the sound of the soul. However, the communication is lost in the soul sound and cannot be remembered when the soul is not sounding. So the man does not remember the words when not under the influence of the solar angel. And I think that's very interesting. When response is recognized as emanating from the three, the one in silence listens. Do you ever think your soul is listening to you? The roles are changed. God listens, right? In other words, you call out to your higher power, help, and the higher power listens. That's the lowest version of it. The roles are changed. A threefold word issues from out the triple form. Triple the call must be, and long it takes to sound it forth, let the disciples sound the call across the desert, over the seas, and through the fires which separate him from the veils and hidden door. A threefold word issues from out the triple form, a turning round is caused. The eyes no longer look upon the world of form, they turn within. Focus the light, that's two eyes, and see revealed the inner world of being. With this, the manas stills itself, for eyes and mind are one. Not I and mind, but eyes and mind. So this is like the beginning of Raja Yoga, isn't it? The first thing you have to do in Raja Yoga is still the modifications of the citta, right? So, okay. So it's been a long time since I've read this from the old commentary. So communication and response, and the soul listens and it's ready to work together. Okay, let's see what else. The heart no longer beats in tune with low desire, nor wastes its love upon the things that group and hide the real. I assume they group together and aggregate and hide the real. It beats with rhythm new. That's the whole seventh rate thing. It pours its love upon the real. And Maya fades away. So we desire the real, and Maya fades. Kama and heart are close allied. Love and desire form one whole. One seen at night, the other in the light of day. The light of day is the light of Scorpio, in which the illusion of the Hydra is overcome on the Buddhic plane, ruled by the heart. So the heart leads us into the light of day. These are profound things. And I guess we could ponder. Any comments on this particular one here.
Well, I've often thought about the difference between compassion and sentimentality. When, I'm talking about myself, when am I being really compassionate, and when is it just a sentimental sort of intervention? He's intervening one.
What happened?
I wanted to see the last little bit with the slide of Scorpio and which the illusion, right. And then you are.
We're not done yet with this thing.
But you didn't finish.
Right? And that was it. I mean, I just would, you know, the Dalai Lama keeps talking about affection is a biological factor that you have to have experienced it sometime in order to give it. And then he talks about compassion. I'm wondering, in my own role as a teacher, when I'm acting truly out of compassion, and when that sixth ray need to go fix it, intervene.
Right. Well, I don't know. I think probably we're all going to have to find that for ourselves, I suspect. But I think sentiment is based on duality. It's based on liking, disliking, passion, repulsion, and compassion is based on identification. So one, you know, somehow, maybe you're so much one with the one for whom you are compassionate that you know the wise response. And when you're sentimental, you're still very much you, and that person's still very much, and you are fixing. You're not within, not knowing what has to happen. Maybe that's it. But those are just words, and I suppose the experience has to come. I mean, obviously, when we're mentors and in the school and other schools, we're working with our students all the time, and when are we identified with them and wisely knowing what next has to emerge, and when are we fixing them, you know?
It's good that they will be fixed.
Fixed, yes. Oh, uh-oh. You're giving up to be a fixer? Okay.
Why not? Solar Angel fixes us.
Send her to Al-Anon. But the Solar Angel is not allowed to violate the Syrian law of freedom.
No.
Otherwise, the Solar Angel could fix you good. But it doesn't. See, because, you know, the Solar Angel, you know, from the law of freedom, let's just say, the law of freedom is the law of empowerment. And if someone is always fixing us, we never develop our own power, do we? So then we're held, we, you know, our growth doesn't become what it could be, and we're reduced in our stature because someone is helping us over much. And that's the second ray problem. Go in there and help them until they're totally weak. You know, and like Moria said, if you help too much, you make weaklings.
Weaklings.
Weakling. A weakling is someone who is just weak, feeble, weak. When fire and love and mind submit themselves, sounding the threefold word, there comes response. This is so good because, you know, he really elaborates this from what he gave in Cosmic Fire. The one enunciates a word which drowns the triple sound. Now, you know, it's a bit like, how does it go? Dual the moving forward, the door is left behind, there's a hacking of the past. Let the cry of invocation issue forth from the deep center of the group's clear cold light. Let it evoke response from the bright center lying far ahead. When the demand and the response are lost in one great sound, then move outward, something, something, and know that God is fire. Leave the seas behind, see, move across the desert, and leave the seas behind and know that God is fire. Move outward from the desert, leave the seas behind and know that God is fire. Drowned in one great sound. Now, it's all music in a way, because when you think about it, you have notes that can be incorporated in other notes, and chords are made, and they maintain their integrity, and yet the chord is sounding, so the musical analogies are there. The one enunciates a word which drowns the triple sound. God speaks. A quivering and a shaking in the form responds. That sounds very Uranian, doesn't it? Somehow, Uranian. The new stands forth. That's very Uranian. A man remade. This whole thing is Uranian. Okay, I like that. The form rebuilt. The seventh ray is at work. The house prepared. I build a lighted house. The fires unite. And great the light that shines. So can Syria. The three merge with the one. And the blaze a fourfold fire is seen. Through the blaze, a fourfold fire is seen. I'll bet this is all about the destruction of the causal body, too. You know, all about the three super vibrant permanent atoms which then unite and contribute to the destruction of the whole, whereas the jewel and the lotus is that one. You know, if you really look at it, there's the one and the three. Now, they all belong to the monad. The one, I'll put that in here, the one and three belong to the monad, i.e., the jewel and the lotus, and the members of the atomic triangle. Oh, it's along this line, ATL. Oh, ATR. No. Atomic TR. How do you say atomic? Oh, heck. Sometimes I stubbornly find myself trying to find the shortcut when I could have typed it long ago. No. stubborn. Okay. TRL. Yeah, TRL. That's it. ATRL.
Yes.
A waste of time has just been committed.
However, you learn.
Yes, I learned. What?
Remember.
Oh, yes, with ATRL, yeah. Okay. So, in other words, these blazing points all belong to the monad. In other words, the permanent atoms belong to the monad. They don't belong to the solar angel. The jewel and the lotus belongs to the monad. So, okay. All right, so we're being enriched by the old commentary. In this pictorial writing, we have sought to convey, which I have sought to convey in modern English, the sages of old embodied an idea. The old commentary from which these words are taken has no assignable date. What does that mean?
We don't know.
It's got, no, but it's, yeah, it's got a date. It's just like he. Yeah. Should I endeavor to tell you its age? I have no means of proving the truth of my words, and hence would be faced with credulity, a thing aspirants must avoid in their search for the essential and the real, meaning you would just believe me. Okay. I have sought in the above few phrases to give the gist of what is expressed in the commentary through the means of a few symbols and a cryptic text. These old scriptures are not read in the way modern students read books. They are seen, touched, and realized. A psychometric approach. The meaning is disclosed in a flash, assuming the intuition is open, isn't it? Let me illustrate. The words. The one enunciates the word which drowns the triple sound, are depicted by a shaft of light ending in a symbolic word in gold, superimposed over three symbols in black, rose, and green. Thus of the secret scouted with care. See, black is the physical, rose is the astral green, associated with the mental. The superimposition means the drowning. The symbolic words, well, we have a lot to learn, don't we? But it ends up seeming worth learning, doesn't it? You know, I mean, real occultism is a thing so profound with our ordinary level of thought that it just invites us to enter the mysteries and leave the normal world behind without becoming ineffective in the normal world. It's a question of your values. We're here to serve. We learn that which will reveal the inner world, but we learn mostly how we can serve better. I felt it might be of interest to students to know this much about the ancient test book. I think there are a few typos in the... I didn't write that. That's taken out of the CD-ROM. Textbook of the Adepts. Our consideration of this rule will fall into two parts, the relation between the soul and personality. This will be handled particularly with reference to meditation and the daily life, and more than from the theoretical and academical. And then the significance of the words, the lower light is thrown upward. These fires deal with the centers and with the Kundalini fire. Okay, see, it gets quite technical here, much more so than we might have expected. Okay, and we have to arrive at an understanding of our own etheric body for the following reasons. One, the etheric body is the next aspect of the world's substance to be studied by scientists and investigators. This time will be hastened if thinking men and women can formulate intelligent ideas anent this interesting subject. It is happening now.
Yes.
We can aid in the revelation of the truth by our clear thinking and from the standpoint of the present pronouncements about the ether. Scientists will eventually arrive at an understanding of etheric forms of bodies. Okay. Secondly, the etheric body is composed of force currents, and in it are vital centers linked by lines of force with each other and with the nervous system of physical man. Through these lines of force, it is connected also with the etheric body of the environing system. Note that in this lies the basis for a belief in immortality.
What's the page number on that?
Not sure.
77.
For the law of brotherhood or unity, and for astrological truth. Immortality, the law of brotherhood, unity, and astrological truth, all found substantiated in the etheric body. Okay, I mean, you know, it's a early book of DK. It's a rather simple book. Yes, I think we all agree, right? Okay, thirdly, the need of realizing the etheric body is vitalized and controlled by thought. Uh-huh. And can, through thought, be brought into full functioning activity. Well, there's your imagination for you, isn't it? Energy follows thought. We want to energize the etheric body, we work with thought. If we're having issues about health, vitality, and all the rest, thought is the key. This is done by right thinking and not by breathing exercises and holding the nose. Thank you, DK. Have a feeling a joke was just perpetrated on us. When this is grasped, much dangerous practice will be avoided and people will come into a normal and safe control of that most potent instrument, the vital body, by a thought. By a thought. And that this end may rapidly be consummated is my earnest wish. After all, Master DK has an awful lot to do with the etheric body, as he's a master healer, and when he appears, he will be teaching the methods of etheric healing. Okay, and then I discontinued this. Okay, there's more, but I discontinued. And brought in the things that particularly relate to our subject. So why don't we take a very short break? Very short.
Oh,
about 8 minutes. That ought to be enough to just breathe. And then we'll come back and look at the germane points.
Don't hold your nose.
Don't hold your nose.
Yeah.